This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. If you have been watching the polls this presidential election year, you've likely been a little confused about what they're actually telling us. However, one thing is for certain, Wisconsin voters and voters nationally are unhappy. But do we know the real reasons why? Experts Kathy Kramer, political science professor at UW-Madison, and Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette Law School poll, are here. They've been talking to voters and they're going to tell us all the reasons why.
We'll try.
Yes. All right. So, you know, despite all the ongoing primaries nationally, it seems like we're already in general election mode. We know who those top candidates are going to be. You've both been studying public opinion for some time, Charles, maybe a little longer than Kathy here. How is this election year different than past years, would you say?
Well, I think the biggest thing is the obvious, that we're basically looking at a rerun of 2020. Same candidates, some of the same issues. We haven't seen that since the 1950s when it was Eisenhower versus Stevenson for two races in a row. And so that is a weird thing that's different from usual, but it makes this year in some ways very similar to 4 years ago. But as you mentioned, voters are more pessimistic across a variety of things, and we can get into those as part of the reasons for the pessimism. But we are decidedly more negative this year than we were in January 4 years ago. I want to stress that was before the pandemic arrived. So we're kind of making an apples-to-apples comparison of last month before the pandemic versus where we were this January.
Kathy, are there any other key reasons why this is a unique year in your perspective?
Well, it's a bit similar to 2020, I think, but maybe even it's a little bit different, just how entrenched people seem to be. And we saw that in 2016 to 2020 that so many people, just fewer people made up their mind at the last minute. In 2020, people really had a strong point of view and knew how they were going to vote. And it seems to be that that's also the case this time around, if not more so. So people are pessimistic, but they also seem to have strong points of view. And it could be the case they've sort of made up their minds already.
So let's look back at that 2020 year, since we have those same two leading candidates on the ballot. In Wisconsin in 2020, the total number of votes cast in the presidential election was 3,298,041. Democrat Joe Biden got 49.4% of the vote, receiving 1,630,866 votes. Donald Trump got 48.8%, receiving 1,610,184,000 votes. Can you remind us in your analysis, Charles, what were the reasons why Joe Biden won Wisconsin that year?
Well, it's always hard to pin it down to one thing, especially when the vote margin is less than a percentage point. So you could pick practically anything. I think there was, throughout President Trump's term, a low level of job approval for him. He never reached 50% job approval in our polling here in Wisconsin or nationally. And so he came into the race at a bit of a disadvantage. Biden did, despite early not leading in the Democratic primary, did consolidate the Democratic Party behind him quite solidly. That helped him through the fall campaign. And of course, it was a year of abnormal turmoil, first with COVID, then with the George Floyd killing and the protests over that, and the economic consequences of COVID. So all of those things, in some ways, might have led you to think it would be a more of a blowout in the election, but in fact it ended up this less than one percentage point difference.
Do you think that what we learned, what we saw in 2020, is at all instructive for what we might see in 2024? Is that you're an anomaly for all the reasons that Charles brings up?
I think it is instructive in several ways. I mean, one is it was a very close race in 2020, and we expect it to be very close this time around. And 2020 wasn't unusual in that respect. I mean, Wisconsin has seen some really tight presidential races since 2000. So the fact that Biden won by less than one percentage point is kind of become the norm here in Wisconsin. So I think that that's instructive. But the economic disruption, that still seems to be on people's minds, right? So we can talk more about that later as you want us to, but that the pandemic was a huge disruption that way, but that arguably isn't over in the minds of a lot of voters.
You bring up that 20,000 vote margin, less than 1%. Will it be even tighter this time? Do we know that?
We don't know, but it wouldn't be shocking. Four of the last six presidential races were decided by less than 24,000 votes. The two Obama races are the exceptions where there were big margins. And in 2000, for example, we were less than about 11,000 votes on the margin. So, yes, it can be closer even than it was. What will be unusual, I think, right now is if one of the candidates were to win by more than 1%. You know, 1.5%. We used to think those were really close races.
That'll be the shocking thing.
Now it just seems like a blowout.
Interesting.
But nothing in our data shows that. We're seeing a tie here in the state. In our January poll, it was 44-44 with about 12% undecided.
So let's talk about those 2020 voters. I know, Charles, you've done some analysis kind of asking voters about their 2020 vote and whether or not they would plan on switching that vote in 2024. We're going to show a table that kind of summarizes what the polls are telling us. In your analysis, you say you pooled various polls of national registered voters. You asked who did they vote for in 2020, and also if the 2024 election were held today between former President Trump and President Biden, who would you choose? Trump holds on to 91% of his 2020 voters, while Biden keeps 81% of his past supporters. And then in this chart, you can see where maybe those votes have shifted for either of those candidates. Charles, what was your biggest takeaway from that analysis?
Yeah, well, one is simply the overwhelming number of people stick with who they voted for last time. You can ask the vote question in a couple of different ways, including people who are undecided or including third-party candidates, or pushing people to choose between just Biden and Trump. When you do the latter, they're both holding over 90%. But when you allow other alternatives like third-party candidates, that's when Biden support slips a bit, with more past Biden voters choosing someone other than him in their vote. I think this is not super unusual to see this level of consistency over time. But the numbers you just cited show that Biden does have a bit of a worry that he's not holding his supporters quite as well as Trump is holding his. Whether that'll change, the January poll has been a while. Biden has sewn up the nomination since then. But we also have people pushing a vote for uncommitted delegates here in the state and elsewhere. So I think there's some time to see how this shapes up. Last thing is, in January, when we asked people how confident they were that Biden would be the Democratic nominee, that Trump would be the Republican nominee, we found about 12% that doubted either one of them would be the nominee of their party. Now that they've sewn up the primaries, I expect to see in our next poll lots more people saying, yes, this really is the pair we're going to face on the ballot in November.
And they'll have to get more solid about their thinking on the who they will go with.
Precisely.
You know, Kathy, I know your work has been focusing on this group of people that say they feel disenfranchised, that no one is listening to them. Can you tell us a little bit more about that research that you're doing?
Sure. So that I've heard that in a variety of projects I've worked on over the past 20 years, but it does seem to be an intensifying point of view. And most recently, this was in listening sessions that I did with the American Academy of Arts and Sciences on a commission about the economy, a commission called A Commission for Reimagining Our Economy. And we were asking people about their experiences with the economy and their hopes and dreams about the economy, but often it would come up that people express this feeling that neither of the parties is working for people like me. They seem to be more interested in their own political fortunes than in the lives of ordinary Americans like myself. There was a perception that there's sort of a level of corruption in politics in terms of big money being the powerful force and not the voices of the American public. And so there's this sense that the American political system is broken and not listening to ordinary Americans. So there's lots of disenchantment.
Is it a growing group of people, would you say?
It appears to be, and yet the interesting thing is that people still call themselves partisans, right? We have fewer people calling themselves independents, maybe in Wisconsin in particular, but maybe a few more people saying no preference, nothing, like none of it. But it's a little bit hard to tell if that's actually grown or not. So people are disenchanted, and yet they're still holding very strong opinions and leaning to one side or the other.
So do you think that these people that Kathy's talking about are they the undecideds in your poll? Are they the third-party candidate voters?
They're very much third-party candidate voters, the people who are genuinely unhappy. There's a dis word in there somewhere, but unhappy will do, that are unhappy with both parties. They are the people that when you ask, are you a Republican, a Democrat, or an independent, say none of those. They don't even think of themselves as independents. They're just not associated with parties. Those are folks much more likely to say they'd vote for third parties today. They're also actually less engaged in politics, less attentive, less likely to vote, and so on. And that leads them to not align with either party. The contrast is at almost the same time, the people who do think of themselves as partisans have become what some political scientists have dubbed calcified. They've gotten so attached and they're so rigid in their views that they're not likely to move one way or another. That's a recipe, of course, for repeating the election in a very close way because those folks don't move. But somewhere between 6% and 12% of Wisconsin voters fall into the independent category or the disenfranchised category. Those folks are going to likely be late making up their minds, may or may not vote. And so in a very close election, those folks that feel disaffected actually may be in a position to tilt the election in the fall.
I know you don't ask people in your research who they're going to vote for, how they're going to vote, but did you get a sense that these are people who might sit out because of how disenfranchised they feel?
They at least say that. They self-report that they're so disgusted. I'm trying to think of the words people use. Just, I'm tired of it. I'm sick of it. They express that sentiment. So we'll see. The last weeks of a campaign are usually very mobilizing intentionally by both of the campaigns, right?
We'll see a lot of ads.
Mm-hmm. We sure will. Here in Wisconsin, yes.
And it'll emphasize that your vote really matters in a state that's this close. And so mm-hmm. that's a message that should drive turnout up for both parties as it did in 2020.
We just don't know where they'll land in the ballot box. I know that the Marquette Law School poll also asks people about issues. Who do they think, which of the candidates would handle a particular issue better than the other? And so we're going to show a chart that kind of summarizes the latest poll results. Registered voters, this is the national poll, show that Trump is a much stronger candidate, perceived candidate on issues like immigration and the border, the Israel-Hamas war, and the economy. Biden has an advantage with issues like Medicare and Social Security, health care, and abortion policy. I know, Kathy, your research really focuses a lot of that on that issue of the economy and people's perceptions of how the economy is impacting them. By many accounts, the economy is improving. Unemployment, record low, wages are outpacing inflation. Why does President Biden, do you think, get such low marks in that poll? Why are people not feeling this economy in the way that the numbers say they should?
Well, some people say, I mean, some researchers say part of it is due to news coverage. No offense intended, but people have done studies showing how there's been so much more emphasis on inflation in recent months, if not the past year, as compared to the low unemployment rate. And so part of it is the information that people are getting. But also, the indicators that we use to talk about how well the economy is doing are not necessarily what people feel in their everyday experience. So things like GDP, things like how well the stock market is doing, it's kind of meaningless to lots of folks.
Instead, even unemployment, somebody might have a job, but they still can't afford.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Instead, they see gas prices. We know there's clear evidence that what people experience in terms of gas prices has a real impact on their assessments of the economy. And so people don't see the numbers that, you know, political junkies like all of us see necessarily. They don't see those charts, but they see prices in the grocery store, at the gas tank. They hear stories of people struggling to make ends meet, and they feel that in their own lives, where people may be employed, as you say, but does that mean that they're having an easy go of it economically? A lot of times, no.
I know in the poll you talk about a lot of issues, but we've been trained it's the economy, stupid. The economy is the issue that makes the difference. Do you think that that's the leading issue this year?
It's the issue that most people think about most of the time, especially when the economy's not doing great. In periods when we've had a robust economy, then people think about other issues as more important. But let there be even a modest amount of economic pressure, and people mention the economy. What we see is a couple of things. We ask each month, how much have you heard or read about, and then we cite last month's inflation number. How much have you heard about last month's unemployment number? And throughout the year, more than twice as many say they've heard a lot about the inflation number than have heard a lot about the unemployment number. So
the
it fits perfectly with what Kathy is saying. That, and that's even when inflation is relatively down from where it was, but they still are more attentive to that kind of news. What we do see in national polling is that views of the economy actually bottomed out in the summer of 2022. More than 18 months ago. That's also when inflation peaked and started to come down. But views since then of the economy have slowly but steadily worked their way up. But they're still way below where they were at the end of 2019 before the pandemic. And so people are more optimistic about the economy today than they were 18 months ago, but they're still well below where they were pre-pandemic
levels.
So that's
why you might see some nostalgia that President Trump does better than President Biden on that issue?
I think so. Something that's not talked about much is also how much the COVID relief monies, the transfer payments to individuals, mattered during the COVID period. There were big spikes in disposable income during that period because of transfer payments. There was also the child tax credit that mm-hmm. had a big impact
and
on child poverty
away now.
And has now gone away. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, you look at a lot of macroeconomic indicators and you can say, oh, they're mostly good or very good. But if you really compare people's disposable incomes and that spike during the COVID period and the dip during the high inflation months, then it's not, in fact, unreasonable for people to feel exactly the kind of anxiety that Kathy's talking about.
In your recent opinion piece in the New York Times, you talked about some of those trends of growing economic insecurity and some of the numbers that actually are show how people are experiencing the economy. You talk about car loan delinquency, credit card debt, child poverty, food insecurity, and that those are disproportionately impacting Black and Hispanic Americans. Can you talk about what you're hearing from those groups in your research?
One thing is, and it's not necessarily unique to Black and Hispanic Americans, but as you say, they are experiencing these hits to their pocketbooks more than other Americans. But this feeling of the pandemic made it clear to people that really bad things can happen. So if they weren't already feeling economically insecure, there's this heightened level of insecurity just because now we know that overnight the economy can go really south and we can all be, you know, challenged by something unexpected even. But I think another thing that's happening is that people saw that the government can make a major change in a short period of time in things like reduction of child poverty, that if it wanted to, the government could help people out in a major way. And so they've seen it happen, they've experienced it, and then it went away overnight, whether it was in terms of housing subsidies or helping out with child poverty. There's a level of insecurity and also maybe a heightened sense of, yes, like, I need help. People are not hearing
You're not
the struggles.
Listening to me.
Yeah.
So in terms of that group of minorities that are impacted disproportionately, have the trends shown that those folks are voting one way more than another?
There's been some shifts, and the polling is one thing, the actual votes are another. If we look at Milwaukee, for example, in the city wards that are majority Hispanic, the support for Biden was 6 to 8 points less than the support for Clinton had been 4 years earlier in 2016. In the majority Black wards, the Biden support was down just 1 to 3 percentage points, but down a little bit among Black majority wards. When we look at polling today, both state and national, we see Hispanic voters quite disaffected towards Biden in much of that polling, leaning towards voting for Trump. With Black voters, we still see a substantial majority for Biden, but we see Trump getting maybe 1 in 5, which would be much higher than the usual Black vote for Republican candidates. I want to stress that this is a long ways off. We've still got 6 or 7 months to Election Day, and opinions change over that period. But the idea that people in general and Black and Hispanic folks in particular are not feeling good about the country or about the economy, I think that got a little bit of a preview in the 2020 vote results that I talked about, and we're seeing it in my polling and national polling as well.
So as we're taping this last week, President Biden visited Milwaukee. It was the 7th visit by someone from his administration since January. Do you see those visits? He also announced some grants that would impact disadvantaged communities. Is that a sign that he's trying to target this particular segment of the population, would you say?
For sure. I think definitely. Voters of color in Milwaukee and other urban areas in the state, but also the state in general. And, you know, visiting Milwaukee gets him into the Milwaukee media market, and that gets somewhat spread across the state. So the visits are targeted at very intentional to try to attract Wisconsin voters.
Yeah. What about that group of uncommitted voters? Is that a concern for Biden?
Well, I think a big concern is voter turnout in Milwaukee in particular, where we've seen turnout decline since 2012. And that's vital votes for Democrats if they're going to win statewide. We also saw that recent Biden visit to Superior, though. A visit to an area that presidential candidates don't often go to. But over the last 15 years or so, we've seen the north and west of the state moving in a Republican direction, while Milwaukee and especially the Milwaukee suburbs have been moving in a Democratic direction. They've largely offset each other. I think Biden's visit to Superior is indicative of an effort to at least not lose the north and rural part of the state as badly as he did in 2020. And the visit to Milwaukee is to shore up that turnout issue and directly to address the concerns of voters of color that he does care about them. One of those visits was to the Black Chamber of Commerce, for example, to talk specifically about Black business and what he's done. So I think we'll see a lot more of that. They're not likely to turn their backs on Wisconsin this year.
Not a wise decision, I think.
No.
You know, analysts do say that Trump's weakness back in 2020 was related to college-educated voters, suburban women in many cases, that they played a role in his loss in 2020. You mentioned the WOW counties and some shifts there. They certainly were credited for some Democratic victories in the 2022 gubernatorial race and in the Supreme Court justice election. Do you think that Biden will hang on to those suburban voters, or is that a risk for him too?
Well, I think he will, but the question is, does he continue to make the kinds of gains Democrats have been making in the Milwaukee suburbs? Just to put it in context, so the 2020 election was decided by just over 20,000 votes statewide. But the change in the margin for Republicans in the WOW counties, Washington, Ozaukee, Waukesha, that margin fell by 40,000 votes from 2012 to 2020. And we have an election determined by 20,000 votes. So you can see right there how important those suburbs are. And it hasn't been only when Trump is on the ballot. Scott Walker's support fell steadily in those suburbs. And in the 2022 election, Michaels got even less than Walker had done in 18. So it's not just a Trump effect. It's a much broader across elections where the suburbs are they're still majority Republican. I want to stress that. But they're by a much smaller margin now than they were. And as I said, conversely, in the rural parts of the state, we're seeing the opposite pattern of becoming more and more Republican.
You've written a lot about this rural-urban divide in your career. Is that divide getting wider? What do you see in that?
It appears to be. And that too, as Charles said, is a long-term trend where there's something like 21 counties that have shifted more than 20 percentage points since 2000. And several of those, I think five or six, have shifted more than 30 points towards the Republican Party. So we expect it to continue, and I think the pandemic arguably has reinforced that a bit, where a lot of rural communities felt very much outside of the circles of decision-making and felt as though they were not treated, they just were not regarded well, not given much attention during the pandemic by people in charge, so...
And that urban-rural divide, interestingly, shows up if you look within counties as well, where the villages or the cities, if they're a little bit bigger, are generally either voting Democratic or at least only marginally Republican. When you go out into the countryside in the towns that surround the cities and villages, it's deep red in a lot of these. So it's
with groups of people that live geographically close to each other.
But, you know, if we picked a county, we'd call it a rural county. Mm-hmm. But even if you look at a town there or a village of 5,000 or 6,000, it's almost inevitably less Republican, more Democratic than if you move outside the city limits. And that pattern just replicates in county after county. There are a few exceptions, but this urban-rural divide that I tend to think of in terms of Madison or Milwaukee versus, mm-hmm. you know, up north somewhere, actually does get replicated in a large percentage of our counties around the state. Mm-hmm. So polarization is true at that sort of county level as well as it is at the state level.
So we are at the end of our interview, but one thing I wanted to ask is about this general distrust. I know your polls show distrust in the election process. Your research talks about distrust of institutions. What does that, and we have to be quick, what does that distrust mean for this election, would you say, that level of distrust?
Well, I think it raises a big question about leadership in this country, because there are many causes of this distrust, but one thing seems pretty clear is people can be reassured or encouraged to distrust institutions and other people by the people whom they're paying attention to and looking up to. So it means a big role for leadership.
Is there a way to gain back that trust?
I don't see any overnight solution for these things, but I think leadership is the answer. That as long as we see political candidates bashing the governments that they are in entrusted to run. This is very bad. It's not a short-term thing, though. The percent of people saying they can't trust the federal government to do what's right has been falling since the 1960s, but it's really low right now. Over 60% say the government is run for a few big interests in our polling. And this year, we're seeing between 18 and 20% saying they have an unfavorable view of both Biden and of Trump. That's a little lower than it was in 2016, where it was in the mid-20s. But it's up a lot from the 12% that disliked both of them in 2020. So I do think in that sense, we have another picture of a little bit of cynicism or malaise, if you will, about both candidates.
Well, we're sorry to leave the show on a negative note, but maybe we'll come back and we'll hear some differences in the polls and from voters. So thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.